Women came together and called for rights, including the right to vote. It happened, but not overnight. We continue to learn that justice for all can be an elusive concept, one that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and occasionally some backsliding. The ways in which feminists achieved their goals can be seen as a blueprint for other activists to push for change, and that blueprint is laid out with plenty of examples in the book Feminism in Practice, Communication Strategies for Making Change, written by Karen Foss, Sonia Foss, and Alina Amato Ruggiero. Sonia and Karen Foss are educators and twin sisters born in Portland and raised in Eugene. Karen A. Foss is a retired professor at the University of Colorado, Denver. Sonia K. Foss is a retired professor at the University of New Mexico. Alina Amato Ruggiero is a professor at Southern Oregon University in the Communication Department. She's in the studio with me. Professor Ruggiero, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Karen Foss, welcome to you.
I'm delighted to be here.
And Sonia Foss, welcome to you.
Thanks for your interest.
It's good to have you all here. Alina, I want to start with you because your co-authors make it sound like you lit a fire under them. How did this process start?
I think the fire was mutual. I have been teaching a course at Southern Oregon University for many years called Women Transforming Language. And the magic in that class was created because I was using a textbook written by Sonia Foss, Karen Foss, and Cindy Griffin. And I had been teaching that course for so long with that book that it was time for that book to be updated. And so I, with trembling fingers, sent an email to these colleagues, but who were strangers to me, and asked if they were going to do a new edition of the book. And they said, no, we don't have any plans for a new edition of that book. And so I wrote back, trembling even more, well, would you not sue me if I tried to do a new edition of the book? And maybe 24 hours passed, and the most amazing email dropped into my inbox where they said, you know, we've talked about it and we've thought about it, and maybe we should write a new version of that book, and we want to do it with you. And that evolved into the book that was published this month.
So Karen Foss, talk about the basis of what you did both in the past and in this book as well. I mean, you're saying that feminism provides a blueprint that other activisms can follow?
Yes. In the first book, we detailed the change strategies, essentially, of a variety of feminists, mostly from the second wave. And those were more detailed treatments of, I think, about 10 feminists. And so for this book, we decided to continue the focus on strategies, but to also try to include a wider variety of women, and in focusing on the strategies to really see what was different, what was changing, how feminism might have evolved over time. So we ended up with 20 women, and we came up with three strategies for each of them. Many of them have many more than that, but we had to stop somewhere. So what we're saying essentially with this second book is that if you look at these change strategies, it might give other social movements some options for doing change that they may not have thought about. And the reason that we argue that feminism is such a good blueprint is because it's been around for so long and it's been very effective.
Well, Sonia, how solid a guide does it offer, though? Because, you know, you certainly have gains to look at. I mean, women have voted for 100 years, but there are still people who doubt that a woman could get elected by the votes of Americans in the United States.
Well, that's always the issue, isn't it, of how effective these strategies are. And that actually is one issue we don't deal with in the book about effectiveness. But what we're essentially trying to do is to just give people options for a rhetorical toolbox. So some things that they might not have thought about. I think another contribution we make that could be useful for other movements, too, is that we identify five different change objectives. And I think these can work not just for feminists, but for all sorts of change movements. So the five are proclaiming identity, naming a problem, enriching a system, changing a system, and creating an alternative system. So the strategies we identify under each of these, they can be used to accomplish that objective, but other ones as well. I mean, we're not saying only people trying to create or accomplish this one objective. use these strategies. But what we're hoping people will get is an idea of, oh, look at all this variety out there of things I maybe didn't think about doing. And it might encourage people to clarify, well, what exactly is it that I'm really trying to focus on in my change efforts?
Alina Ruggiero, you guys do acknowledge in the book that feminist is considered an insult by some people still.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there are certainly pockets of a culture in this country where feminism is still a dirty F word. And certainly around the globe, there are cultures where women's rights and justice are not valued. So the work and the need for the work continues.
How would you characterize this book then? A textbook, a movement owner's manual, both, neither?
I'm hoping for both. I'm certainly going to teach my Women Transforming Language course using this book and focus it around, you know, because what my students really appreciated in the when I taught using the first book was the section of each chapter about, okay, now that we know what the problem is, what are we going to do about it? And these are communication tools that people can use to make their world better.
Interesting that it's a communications course because there's a lot of history in here too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's interdisciplinary possibilities. And certainly it's been written in a way that's so accessible that we want it to go beyond the universities.
Karen Foss, take us back to square one. I mean, how do you define feminism?
Well, that was one of the more interesting parts about writing the book, because we got to see all of these definitions of feminism. For me, basically, though, feminism is about self-determination and the right of everyone to make their own choices for their own lives. And maybe I can jump in here.
Go ahead, Sonia.
This is Sonia. The definition that we give for feminism in the book is different from what I think most people think feminism is, or how most people would define feminism. Most people, if you ask them, say, well, it's the effort to achieve equality for women with men. And we reject that definition for a couple of reasons. One is, to which men do we want women to be equal? Not all men are equal. They don't all have the same status and power. So who are we trying to get women to be equal to? The second problem is, it suggests that the point of feminism is to get women to measure up to what men already are. In other words, to use men as the model for their lives. And we don't think that's appropriate either. So the definition that we use in the book is that it's a way of approaching experiences that involves three processes: understanding, critique, and transformation. And so feminists want to understand how gender operates in the world. They want to critique the conception of gender that's out there, so challenging the restrictions that are imposed by the gender binary. And then they want to transform or change gender relations. They want everyone liberated from the constraints of the gender binary.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the term androcentrism really jumped out. It's like, oh, yeah, be careful of what you look for and how you measure it.
Exactly. So when you say you want women to be equal to men, you're essentially saying you're buying into this androcentrism business that males are the model for everything, and everything is male-centered.
As we mentioned, there are five basic strategies here: proclaiming identity, naming a problem, enriching a system, changing a system, and creating an alternative system, with fairly well-known women in each category to help tell the story. And let me turn this back to Alina then, because how difficult to limit the list of women that you could include in the book.
Right. We never want to claim that the list of women in this book are representative or exclusive. We wanted to get a broad range of women from all different professions, ages, races, nationalities, levels of ability, disability. We wanted to get people who were politicians, people who were academics, and also people from pop culture.
Like Padma Lakshmi. Why is she the first person in the category of proclaiming identity?
Well, because Padma Lakshmi talks about how she went on a journey about her own skin color and eventually came to the conclusion that that was actually what made her distinct and unique and marketable as a television personality. And so that process of learning to embrace who she was and how she was doing feminism is exactly that illustration of a feminist communication strategy.
Go ahead.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
The other thing I think why I like having Padma first is she has a great comment about feminism. She says, you'd have to be unhinged not to be a feminist. what are you saying? You want unequal pay for equal work? So I think it's a good kind of fun way for people to start taking a look at feminism if they're kind of uncomfortable with the term, because she just dismisses all of that.
And how? What kinds of change strategies does Padma Lakshmi bring to the table?
Well, one of them, which Alina alluded to, is reinterpreting identity markers. So she had several things in her life, her skin color, the scar, the fact that she was between cultures, things that were not comfortable for her. But she ultimately reinterprets them to make them positive rather than negative aspects of her life. Another one is enacting self-determination. For the longest time, she just responded to the phone call, she essentially said. Somebody offered her a job and she would take it. And then she finally realized that she could have agency. She could determine the direction of her life. And I think that's a very feminist kind of strategy. And then also sharing personal challenges. She's not afraid to make herself vulnerable, to talk about the challenges she's had in her life. So all of these are ways that she puts herself out there, proclaims her identity, essentially.
Sonia Foss, Karen Foss, Alina Ruggiero, all our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, all the authors of Feminism in Practice, Communication Strategies for Making Change. So let me pause here. Do all the women you've chosen here consider themselves feminists, Alina?
Yes, to one degree or another, they would all self-identify as feminists. But there's a whole chapter in this book that talks about the way that feminism is not monolithic. We should talk about feminisms plural. There are all kinds of different feminisms, many different branches. And so that was part of our selection process, was finding women who represented many different approaches to being feminist.
Well, in fact, one of the people you mentioned here, Kat Black, who's a blogger or vlogger or both.
Yeah, so yes, she has a YouTube channel, so mm-hmm. She's a video blogger.
Thought of herself once as an anti-feminist, is that right, Fosses?
Yes. Actually, several of the women in the book were anti-feminists. Lizzo is another one. And then they all say, once they learned about what feminism is, then I said, well, of course I am one. So, again, I think that speaks to the negative connotations around the term in our culture. Most people reject it just sort of automatically without thinking about, well, what do I know about it, or what is it really? So, yeah, Kat Black was one of them, but there were several women like that.
Yeah, Malala Yousafzai was another.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to Malala in just a bit. In this example of proclaiming identity, I want to. It's a great time to talk about Lizzo, because I flinched at black fat woman, but realized this is her own description. This is her own claiming of her identity.
That's right, exactly. And so she's another good example of essentially she's saying, I have some characteristics that the dominant culture would say these are negative, and you're going to get penalized or discriminated against because of them. And she says, no, you're not going to do that to me. And so her strategies are disrupting norms around, for example, sexuality for fat women. She wants to celebrate everybody, no matter what shape it is, what size it is. And then she deliberately sets out to be a representative of marginalized others so that people can see themselves in her and say, oh, okay, there are people like me. And she's creating a good life for herself, and so I can do that same thing.
You report in the book that that Lizzo thought it was taboo to be a black feminist. Why?
Well, there's a whole history of the interaction between feminism and black women, and for some parts of the movement, for many years, it was focused on white middle class women. Now, there've always been black women involved, but they haven't always been featured or centered, and we don't know as much about them. And so for some of these women, they just assumed, well, feminism's not for me, it's for middle-class white women. And that's why we had the whole womanist aspect develop, where black women choose to call themselves womanist rather than feminist, a term that was coined by Alice Walker.
Okay, and I see Valissa Thompson is one of the people in the Proclaiming Identity section that that says the very same thing. Proclaiming Identity is just one of the five basic strategies. In addition to naming a problem, enriching a system, changing a system, creating an alternative system, offered in the book Feminism in Practice, Communication Strategies for Making Change by Karen Foss, Sonia Foss, and Alina Ruggiero. Alina's in the studio with me. The Fosses are on the phone from their respective seats in Colorado and New Mexico, and you can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have a question via email from a Sonia B. in Medford who says, how does one reach others if they are hesitant to talk about the issue? Alina?
I think what I learned from the process of this book is to start with who you are and where you are. And so, you know, the way to hook into this issue is to first figure out, you know, who am I? And that's actually a really important value in feminism, that our feminist theory and practice comes from our embodied situations, where we are and who we are in society, and start there. And that's what all the women in the book have done. They figured out who they are and then how they want to make change in their world.
Well, and then, you know, obviously the next section is naming a problem, which you want to be able to speak to what you're doing. But Fosses, why is this so fraught for so many people, just to be able to name the problem?
I think it goes back to the beginnings of the second wave of feminism, where Betty Friedan said, this is a problem that has no name, the discontent of American women. And I think it speaks to a continuing sort of issue that unless a problem can be named, it can't be talked about. Sexual harassment is an excellent example. It wasn't until 1972 that a woman teaching a class at Cornell realized that all of her students, most of them, many of them, had had experiences with what we now call sexual harassment, but they didn't have a label for it. And so she finally gave it a label, and now it can not only be talked about, it can be addressed.
I'm reminded by the chapter on Jamie Margolin that some issues like climate change are not thought of as primarily feminist issues. Does a feminist voice add weight? Does it subtract? Or does it really just depend on the issue?
I think once you see feminism as a perspective, a way of approaching experiences, and you're trying to understand, critique, and transform, then you start to see all sorts of issues, almost every issue, as a feminist issue, because you're taking what once seemed natural and normal and you're questioning it. And so often a feminist perspective will encourage you to look at some voices that haven't been heard, or to look at the power dynamics in something, or to say, well, what would this look like from a woman's life and a woman's perspective? And a good example is human rights. When we think about human rights, we tend to think about human rights the way men define them, like, I don't want to be tortured, you know, I don't want to be killed. And from women's perspective, human rights can be things like, I don't want to be sexually trafficked. I want to have security in terms of a place to live and enough food. And those things don't always come up in standard definitions of human rights.
Mm-hmm. We have there's an example, too, in the naming the problem section of Camille Paglia, who reports she revolted against gender norms when she was young, but she also criticizes feminism now. Why? Alina?
Camille Paglia is very provocative as a scholar and as an author. And one of the things that I like about her inclusion in this book is to double down on the idea that there are lots of different ways to approach these questions. And we included feminists that didn't necessarily resonate with our own style of feminism. And so Camille Paglia really pushes feminism to the edge with her critiques.
All right. So again, Proclaiming Identity, Naming a Problem, we're now up to Enriching a System. Karen Foss, diversity comes up loud in this section, but was there much diversity in the early waves of feminism?
No, it was a largely white women movement, both during suffrage and the second wave. But as Sonia said earlier, there have always been women of color involved in feminist activity, even though it wasn't formal. So, and the third and fourth waves of feminism, that's where you really see an emphasis on bringing all people into the movement. And one of the major focuses in both those movements is on intersectionality and foregrounding difference. And so it's really the third and fourth waves where you see more of that, where it's really explicit.
Intersectionality meaning I'm not just a feminist, I'm also this and this and this.
Yes, it has to do with how all of your identity markers interact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so gender and race and ability and religion, all of these things are making it so that you experience life in certain ways and people respond to you in certain ways.
Sonia, from your perspective, are constant reminders necessary to make sure that diverse voices are heard?
Oh, sure. And I think that's one thing that feminism is doing really well now, is constantly reminding us of that. And I think sometimes we hear it so often, we just sort of turn it off and go, yeah. But that's, I guess, one thing we like about the women from all different parts of our culture saying that same thing. They're saying it in different ways. They're making it really come alive. I think we all need those reminders.
The book actually fell open the first time I picked it up to chapter 11, which features Shonda Rhimes, the well-known television producer of, so many things, starting with Grey's Anatomy, Scandal. What was the British one?
I was watching Bridgerton.
Bridgerton is the one I'm thinking. Yeah. Yes, yeah. So, yeah. But man, she just flays the idea of lucky, Alina Ruggiero.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of saying, "Oh, I was just lucky," Shonda Rhimes' strategies for enriching a system include making diversity normal. You know, so she casts people in front of the camera and also hires people behind the camera with all the diversities that they bring based on their talents, and that makes seeing diversity and working with diversity just a normal thing.
What's also interesting about her is that she does not cast characters according to race. So she just has an audition and she sees who shows up, and if it's a black person who does the best, she'll cast that person. And so that's why you see that great diversity in her programs in terms of race and genders and all sorts of things.
Oh, and beyond her TV programming, talk about the creation and contribution of Shondaland.com.
Yes, Karen, maybe you can talk about
that. Yes, that's her website where she, you know, provides all kinds of information for change agents, but also for people just looking for inspiration.
Well, isn't it also the name of her company?
Well, yes. The name of her company is Shondaland. And her website is Shondaland. So,
but it's more than just her business. Then is the point that she's offering all kinds of advice to people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now we move on to Jacinda Ardern, who is the Prime Minister of New Zealand. Authenticity looms large, and Sonia Foss, that is not a frequent thing in politics, is it?
No, it's not at all. And she's really unusual, I think, for a major political leader. People say you can't tell the difference between her personal life and how she presents herself and her political side. And you also see this in one of her other strategies, is implementing an ethic of care. And she really tries to enrich the political system by bringing in the feminist values of care and compassion and empathy, things
and kindness
that you would not normally see in politics. So those are things she values in her personal life, and she's really trying to import them into politics.
And that also goes to her approach to feminism. To her, it's absolutely normal, and she hardly wants to talk about it because she said, this should be a normal part of our culture. Why are you making a big deal about me being a feminist?
Huh.
She had a baby, you know, 6 months into office, she said, this is what women do. Women work and women have kids, so I'm managing.
All right.
So get over it.
Before we depart the enriching a system portion of the strategies here, we need to talk about Malala Yousafzai, who I think, Sonia, you brought up earlier, and she thanks her father for her feminism?
Yes, I Karen, can maybe you can talk more about this since you wrote that chapter.
Yes. Yes, her father decided when he and his wife got married that they were going to have an egalitarian household. So he said, we're going to treat our girls and our boys the same. And when she was born, he did all the same rituals you would do as if you'd had a son. And he said, this is just how it's going to be. So he says he didn't have the word feminism until they moved to the UK. But then he said, that's the word I was really looking for my entire life. And so, you know, during her process, too, she realized she was reluctant to claim the label because she had heard horrible things about feminism. But then when she started reading about it and talking to her father, she said, well, yes, of course, I'm a feminist. So
that's interesting that people would resist the term and then realize, oh, wait a minute, this describes me. So here I am.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. So that's in the portion of the strategies called enriching a system. That's the middle of five. We'll go back and talk about them. Proclaiming identity, naming a problem, enriching a system, changing a system, and creating an alternative system. So we're up to changing a system. And explain, would you, one of the Fosses about how resisting a system can inadvertently strengthen it?
Yes. And this is something that a lot of people don't think about it, but it's something that one of the theorists from the first book, Sonia Johnson, talks a lot about. And she was a traditional feminist activist for years and years and years. And it finally occurred to her that maybe some of the efforts the feminists were doing were actually making the system stronger. And the example she gives, which I think is a really fun example, she said, so picture patriarchy as this big fort on a hill. And these women are going at it with this battering ram for centuries, you know, trying to get in and to get the men to change. She said, meanwhile, if you look on the other side of this fort, the men are strengthening it wherever that battering ram makes a dent. They're figuring out, like, where the women are going to go next. They're just really reinforcing it so that nothing's going to change. And so she said this caused her to think about maybe what we resist persists because we're giving it all of our energy and our attention and our power instead of focusing on, well, what is it that we want instead of opposing what we don't want?
That could be a subtle difference, can't it?
Well,
because if what you want is the destruction of the system as it has existed, I mean, you know.
Yes, but instead of saying, I want the system destroyed, well, what do you want a system to look like instead? So it's really a pivot, I think.
Okay, I understand that. All right, so and you also point out in the book that change agents can be co-opted. Can one of you give the example of the Femocrats in Australia?
Yes, that's a group who was actually incorporated into the system in Australia to help write diversity plans. And so they thought, oh, this is great. We've got feminists in the actual organization. But they realized ultimately that they would approve a diversity plan. The particular department would hold this up and say, look, 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 we've got approval. And that was kind of the end of it. They didn't implement it. It's a nod in the right direction, but it really ends up often co-opting those individuals who thought they were, you know, an established and valuable part of the system.
Who wants to talk about Nadia Boltz-Weber, who was a very churchy person and then a rebel, and then what?
Oh, I would gladly take Nadia Boltz-Weber because she's one of my very favorite feminists in this book. Nadia Boltz-Weber is a devout Lutheran pastor, and she maintains that ordination while doing her feminist work. And she founded a church called House for All Sinners and Saints to try to minister to the people who wanted to identify as Christians, but who were not receiving a nourishing message from kind of a traditional church. And so she talks about the people on the corners as the ones who, those outsiders that she wants to bring into the center.
Now, she even took a hand at rewriting the story of Virgin Mary?
She, like, her ministry style is to take the stories in the Bible that are sacred to her audience, but to turn them on their heads, to really look at whose voice isn't getting heard here, whose story isn't getting told, and to make those the models for the people in the church.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of the differences between the paintings of the Last Supper, of Michelangelo versus Tintoretto, with the table twisted in one direction. You get a really different view of the table at the Last Supper in Tintoretto's view.
My favorite thought about that's the image of the Last Supper is, who do you think made that meal? Who do you think served that meal? Who do you think bankrolled that meal?
Okay, yeah, excellent point there. Okay, so that's gotten us through the first four strategies. We get to creating an alternative system, and I'm going to ask one of the Fosses to talk about if this is the part that makes would-be change agents most uneasy.
Huh? Why do you ask that? Because I'm trying to want a new system.
Well, the level of imagination that's required there, not just to oppose the system, but as we talked about just a minute ago about imagining what could be that isn't.
Yes, and I guess I wouldn't say this makes people, or I hope it doesn't make people uncomfortable. I hope it gives them inspiration that people are actually thinking about what would this look like, and I think that's really our most important task. I think this one does require the most imagination and the most courage, though, because you really are going outside of what is known and established.
And there has to be some overlap, I would think, or does there? Because it's not like the old system shuts down on Friday and the new one opens up on Monday morning at 8 a.m.
That's absolutely right. And if you look at the strategies here, many of them involve a step that still alludes to the system. So Sarah Ahmed has recognizing a problem. Leslie Keynes Wiseman has critiquing the system. So does Jennifer Armbrust. Or actually, the remaining three do. So you absolutely have to understand the old system, and then you have to begin to generate the new possibilities.
Tell us a little more about Sarah Ahmed's approach, because she really talks about becoming a problem, doesn't she?
Yes, and she has a fun approach to this, I think, in the sense that she says when you become a feminist and start speaking up about injustice, many people think you're the problem, and if you just shut up, the problem wouldn't be there anymore because you're not calling attention to it. So for her, becoming a problem is a very important aspect because it keeps the feminist values out in the world, and it also helps you see what the contrast is with the old system when you start speaking up.
One of you just mentioned Leslie Keynes Wiseman as well. This is really interesting about the way that she can talk about a world built by man because she's an architect. And I guess I never thought about all the built structures and everything, too, just being part of the general view of the people in charge.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things I like about, or one of the examples that she gives in terms of fantasizing and trying to create new ways is she said, why do we have to have two really different kind of entrances for buildings, one for handicapped people or disabled people and one for others who don't have those same kind of disabilities? And so she designs buildings so it's not like you've got a ramp that the wheelchair has to go up and it's really obvious. She'll make it so the ground just sort of starts going up toward the building, and so everybody can use the same entrance, and there's not this distinction between people with certain kinds of abilities and certain other kinds. So she really is trying to figure out some ways to be more respectful of everyone.
We have an email, not an email, it's a drop-off phone question from Terry in Ashland, who writes, he recently realized he's been a feminist all his life and just wasn't identifying with the term or the movement. What advice do you have for cisgender heterosexual men who are closeted feminists, he puts quotes around closeted feminists, on how they can be more supportive and outspoken allies?
Well, yes, first come out of the closet.
One of the things we talk about is for many, many people, they think man and feminism are oxymorons. You know, you can't be both. And so even just saying that you are out loud in public is a really helpful thing to do.
All right. So, but then beyond that, I mean, what's the next step once you get to say, okay, I am a feminist?
Well, speaking up when you see injustices, when people make racist or sexist jokes, don't just stand there. Support the women in your life who are dealing with various feminist issues. You could also experiment with some of the change strategies in the book. Try them out. Mm-hmm. See how they work. Do they feel comfortable?
Let's continue along on the final change strategy, creating an alternative system, because one of the people used as an example here is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Congress, who obviously works within this system, but, you know, obviously some recent challenges, like showing up at the Met Gala with a bunch of rich people with a dress adorned with red letters that said, tax the rich. let's talk with for all of you then what it represents. I mean, whether it's an individual choice, whether you're agnostic about this, or whether you have some really strong feelings about whether people should work as AOC does within the system, or as an activist or a pressure group outside the system. Sonia Foss?
Well, I think all of them have advantages and disadvantages. And so I think one of the strategies that one of the women talks about, Carrie Goldberg, she's a lawyer, she says, learn the system. Learn the systems that you're dealing with really well. So I think one thing I would suggest is take a look at the landscape. Like, what are you dealing with here? Really know what that is. And then say, okay, which of these change objectives is the one that's going to be the most fruitful at this particular time? So I think, I mean, I certainly have a bias. I like the last category the best. but it won't work all the time. And, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a good example. Yes, she is in the system, but she also does a lot of things that kind of make her stay outside of the system.
I think a good example is how she handles the pay of her staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, because one thing she discovered was most of the staff of congressional representatives, they don't earn enough money to pay rent in Washington, D.C., because either they're working for free or for really low salaries. And so she gives everybody on her staff the same amount. They all have health care benefits. And she managed to work it so the budget she has can do this. And the top staff member doesn't get as much as other top staff members. So she's trying to do things, yes, within the system, but also that nobody else had thought of doing before, because she still maintains that outsider perspective.
Okay, we're down to our last 45 seconds or so. Alina, what are your thoughts about working within the system versus without?
I love that there are options. I love that the Foss twins are further along with creating an alternative system, whereas I'm all about proclaiming identity,
uh-huh.
And that's okay.
Okay, so you're early. I mean, this is a sequence. Then you have to go through all five phases in this order necessarily?
I wouldn't say that. I think instead we've got lots of people working in different ways on the same issue based on who they are and what they value and what their style is.
Okay, and a quick shout out to the artist in the book, Liza Fair. Where did you guys collect her?
She created beautiful line drawings of each of the women in the book to go with their chapters.
Many names you'll recognize. We just really kind of skimmed the surface of it. The book is called Feminism in Practice: Communication Strategies for Making Change. Karen Foss, thank you.
Thank you.
Sonia Foss, thank you.
Thank you.
And Alina Ruggiero from Southern Oregon University, glad to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.